Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on podcast. This podcast is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, short show this week, friends, just you and me. A lot of non-film stuff happening in the film sociology world this week, but I want to start, obviously, with the Academy Awards. The awards itself, as I mentioned, I did, if I had a ballot, and my ballot agreed with some, not all, and that's okay. There wasn't anything that won that bugged me. So congratulations to Brendan Fraser for The Whale, as much as I love Bill Nye's Living. Ki-Hai Kwan, a lot of great speeches as well. Congrats to Michelle Yeoh. Congrats to Jamie Lee Curtis, second generation show business family, and knocked it out of the park. Was really happy for Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, although I want more people to see Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. Now that the awards are done, I'm hoping more people will go see Living and Banshees of Inisherin and films like Causeway and After Sun and To Leslie, which is still being discussed. So that part of it is fine. Oh, also, I hope more people check out All Quiet on the Western Front. It has been a long time since I actually watched any version of All Quiet on the Western Front, which helps. And if this is your first time checking out All Quiet on the Western Front, you're doing solid. You're going to be in for a solid gut punch of a film. So just putting that out there. So anyway, happy about all that. Of course, the backlash came with the In Memoriam. And we every year, I think we count who did and who did not make the In Memoriam. And I think it started going back when Farrah Fawcett didn't get in. And that's one of those things where, you know, they did TV and film. So, but yeah, obviously the big one in our world was Paul Sorvino. And you can hear the airing of the grievances on Drinks with Dee Dee, with Dee Dee Sorvino, of which I'm a regular panelist on that program. I was happy to say when you listen to that show, and it's a fun, it's bar conversation, via Zoom, that, the frustration was let out by Dee Dee and us, and we didn't dig too deep into there were no tinfoil hat conspiracies. Obviously the big question is why, and, the answer that was sent to Dee Dee via the Academy was not to her satisfaction. And I get that. It was kind of a CYA thing. But the fact that not just Paul, but, I know Tom Sizemore, who had passed away recently, and that's another, a timing issue is always something that is brought up, but the fact that you had William Hurt, an Academy Award winner, and I know he had his issues, off screen, which I, you know, wouldn't be surprised if it had something to do with it, but you also had Melinda Dillon, who, was a nominee. And was my example of it can't be all political because she campaigned for Humphreys back in the late 60s. Topol, great nominee. Robert Morse. So anyway, it was interesting that Jimmy Kimmel, during the beginning of the speech, he talked about how they brought back the categories because they got some backlash for not airing some of the awards of the technical awards, which, as I've mentioned before, the Tonys and the Oscars are the only award shows I watch. I don't care if the Academy Awards is 5 hours. Show it. I wish they would bring back the honorary stuff. I wanted to see Peter Weir get his career achievement, the honorary awards. So, those are probably gone, although I would like those back. And you can make the In Memoriam as long as you want. You can make it 7 minutes long. Now, they had a live performance by Lenny Kravitz, and there was even talk of, you know, you didn't have to show the In Memoriam logo. You didn't have to show Lenny Kravitz. You would just have picture after picture after picture. So, but also the fact that it is live, that has something, I'm sure, that has something to do with it. And I also heard, there was also word that there were 17 committees, I think, as far as the different technical aspects, because it's not all actors. It's not all directors. It is casting agents and producers and cinematographers and costume designers. Give them all their glory, or at least, or I should say, give them all their tribute, their salute, their respect by putting them on the In Memoriam. So, yeah, that was frustrating. As a film nerd and, you know, full disclosure, somebody who chatted with Paul Sorvino briefly on Zoom a couple of times and is friends with his widow, it sucked. It was just really a glaring omission. So that was the biggest snafu. Forget, you know, there was no slap, and, you know, like I said, the winners I was all absolutely fine with, even if it didn't match my ballot. So I was fine with it. I just wish that they had improved on that. So there you go. So anyway, now, and trust me, Dee Dee's not going to let up. So I'm sure we will hear more updates as that goes along. But now I'm hoping people will check out more films that were winners or nominees, films like Close and EO and The Quiet Girl, for you fans of international films. So yeah, that is what's happening there. Congratulations to everybody. Okay, I did have one thing happen Oscar weekend that I'm really happy happened to me. This happened on Sunday. We were up in Chicago, Lynn and I, Mrs. Sosi. We were visiting the college kid. And I had one of those moments where I got to revisit a film that I was not crazy about the first time out. Friends, and I wrote about this on Facebook on Monday, so if you have seen it, just bear with. But there are times as a film goer where the timing isn't right. And hopefully you, as time goes on, think, maybe I wasn't ready for it. And now there's a slew of films where the timing is just bad between the film and the audience member. It's not the film's fault. It's not your fault. It's just bad timing. And I was happy to say on Sunday I got to correct one of those cinematic bad timings. And it's the film Stand By Me. Rob Reiner's film from 1986. I was 16 when that film came out. I was already a full-blown cinema D-bag. Hopefully not a Twitter bro. But I was 16. I had already seen the films of Francis Ford Coppola based on S.E. Hinton novels, you know, Rumblefish and The Outsiders. Those films about youth, for me, overshadowed anything John Hughes did, and I thought the last thing I need are 4 12-year-old boys in the 50s walking, playing, fighting, showing their feelings, crying. You know, I was just not in for it. I was looking for more grown-up fare, more arty fare, because I was 16 and a jerk. So anyway, Sunday morning, and we're getting ready to take the kid out to brunch before going to see 1776 on stage, which I highly recommend if you're in Chicago. But anyway, it was one of those where I got up, I turned the telly on, and the film was starting. And I just sat in, and it's really good. I know, it's 1986. 36 years later, 37 years later, whew. Really solid performances by the four lads, River Phoenix, Will Wheaton, Corey Feldman. God, Corey, get some help. Jerry O'Connell, or as I wrote on behalf of Chubby Boys Everywhere, tell Rebecca about my shows. So those really good performances, really scary performance from Kiefer Sutherland. The bridge scene with the train is still tense as hell. That was the one thing I remembered more than anything, more than the boys' conversation and the crying and the feelings, was that chase between the boys and the train. Still holds up, obviously. Very solid. So So I put it out there on Facebook. I said, what are your examples of films where the timing was just off? And this is from me where I still think The Big Chill should be watched every 5 years because, as I mentioned, I was 13 when The Big Chill came out and really loved the acting. And what I got out of it was vulnerable grown-ups. And I got that again when I was 18. And then I hadn't planned on seeing it every 5 years. It just kind of happened. But I watched it again when I was 18. And then by the time I was 23, I had a classmate from college commit suicide. And so once the – by the way, don't watch The Big Chill after your friend has killed himself, which I wound up doing because I was 23 and dumb. But as life goes on, in my case, you get married, you work, you get married, you have children, and you get older. So, anyway, that's an example. So I go to social media, and we had some really genuine responses. It was great. So a guy writes, his was Brokeback Mountain. Didn't quote unquote get it at all when I viewed it in theater years ago. But now, after many more viewings and much more maturity and realizations about the world, my own life, and the meanings of the concepts of love and loss, I've come to appreciate it so much that it's definitely in my top 25 movie list, probably even top 10, honestly. Thank you, Guy. I know your post, and I really appreciate your openness on that one. Kathy writes, I'll have to think on your question, but for now, let me just say that I have loved Stand By Me since day one. Well, that happens, Kathy, so good on you. I can remember thinking, holy crap, that kid can act. That's River Phoenix. And don't forget the music, perfection for the movie, and narrated by Richard Dreyfuss. Come on. Yeah, River Phoenix, of course. Especially you younger folk out there, look him up. And yes, besides being Joaquin's brother, but also one of the great show business what could have been. And if you get a chance, look for the Sidney Lumet film Running on Empty. Highly recommend that. Eric, regular contributor Eric, says, I first saw The French Connection, a movie I now love, at the Vogue way back last century when it was still a movie theater. And I was a 17-year-old film buff who didn't know just how much he didn't know. Same. I thought the sound was terrible, and I read the grimy cinematography is cheap, and the new wave editing is choppy, and I thought there were big narrative gaps. In short, I thought it was an irretrievable mess. 9 years later, after going to college and getting married and moving to L.A. and seeing hundreds of more films from everywhere, it was one of the first movies I rented for my new VCR, an electrifying revelation with my morning coffee. Just one from a long list of great films I did not get at the time. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate that. Let's see. Jeff writes, I was really, really young when I first saw The Godfather. So was I, Jeff. My dad let me watch it with him. Thought it was boring, rediscovered it a few years back. Holy bleep. The same with The Jerk. Yeah, I was 9 when The Jerk came out, so I got some of the jokes, not all of them. yeah, but I'm with you. Yeah, watching The Godfather and my dad explaining to me why Sonny was killed and why Fredo is not smart. And yeah, that's some. Abby, another regular contributor, writes, I know there are others escaping my mind, but the early MCU movies. I was never really a comics kid, aside from what I know from the 90s animated Batman and Spider-Man series. So when the first couple phases of the MCU were rolling out, I just kind of shrugged. I didn't dislike the idea, it just wasn't my thing. Even watching a few of them for the first time on DVD because friends or family wanted to, like Iron Man, I admitted there might be some intriguing one-off stories. It just didn't hook me as a franchise. Then I think somewhere along the line, I caught a couple of the trailers for Civil War, and something about them hit me differently. Something that felt like there was more to it than just superhero journeys. I think it was how the Russo brothers didn't approach their MCU projects as straight-up superhero movies. They and their writers incorporated other genre structures into their storytelling. I don't know. It opened up the MCU for me in a different light. And yeah, I still recognize that the franchise is superheroes. I'm not expecting them to be deeply intellectual or anything, but neither are they as superficial as assumed as I assumed they would be. Abby, thank you. I understand this. I still think it's a chore. Well, especially now that we're done with the initial first wave of the Avengers, I'm good. I'm just really good. I like to just sit and if I hear, and I've heard folks say, you need to watch such and such and such and such before watching this film, I'm out. I'm sorry. But anyway, but thank you, Abby. Thank you for opening up on that. That's cool. Okay, I'm going to read the same. Melissa writes, Stand By Me is my favorite movie, probably also due to my age when it first came out. See that this is timing. The body is part of my favorite Stephen King novella. I'm glad you're on board this train, pun intended. Running on Empty is a beautiful film. I remember renting it constantly from Mr. Video on the South Side before Blockbuster came on the scene. That and Savannah Smiles, but we can glide on that. Thank you. David writes, and this is one I also remember. David writes, being a big Coen Brothers fan, I saw The Big Lebowski in the theater. I liked it okay, but I remember thinking it's no Fargo or Raising Arizona and forgot about it. I received it on DVD a gift later, and upon rewatching it, thought I must have been in a terrible mood because this is absolutely great. It is among my top five favorite comedies. David, I also saw The Big Lebowski in the theater. I took Mrs. Soucy to see that in the theater, and I remember a very cold response from the audience. And I think folks were expecting another kind of kidnapping comedy like Raising Arizona or Fargo, especially this was the follow-up to Fargo. So, you know, they had stepped into the Academy Award-winning big leagues, and it was just a different tone. But however, I still laughed at the trio, which I said was like a comedic jazz trio of Jeff Bridges, Steve Buscemi, and John Goodman. So I liked it. It was, but I think a lot of people were expecting another Fargo, and that is not what they got. So, cool. All right, thank you there. Doug writes, when I reviewed Ghost for the Bloomington newspaper, it struck me as formulaic rom-com, and I was shocked at its big box office. When I watched it a few years later, I picked up on the pace and humor that worked together to make it appeal to so many people. Thank you, Doug. Kurt. Hey, Kurt. Kurt, you can also see Kurt on Drinks with Dee Dee. By the way, two big moments for Kurt on the Dee Dee episode. Okay, his response. Whitnail and I. Hello, Simon. When it first came out, I saw it in its brief cinematic appearance. Came and went within just a week, if I recall. I was one of three or four in the whole cinema, and I thought it was slow, overacted, and strangely pretentious despite the slumming aspect. But I've come to respect the film a lot more over the years and must confess a fascination with the backstory of the real people depicted in it. Thank you, Kurt, and way to break the barriers on Drinks with Dee Dee. Nicole writes, not films, but two TV shows. Watched Buffy a few years ago after turning my nose up at it when it originally aired. I'm now watching Twin Peaks and loving it, but I couldn't get into it when it originally aired. Nikki writes, The Big Chill was one I just didn't get what all the fuss was about. I watched it again for only the second time a few years ago and decided I understood it a lot more as a 40-something than I did as a 20-something. Yep, that's me. I'm with you, Nikki. Lisa writes, The Ice Storm was a movie I could not get into when it first came out. A decade later, like you, I was having a Sunday on the couch with a blanket morning. Sunday on a couch with a blanket, morning, and it popped up, and I thought, why not? Maybe I'll like it this time around. I was enthralled, quite happy I gave it a second chance. Those are some of the responses on that. So thank you, everybody, for sharing on that. It's all in the timing. So, and I'm hoping with the college kid that they'll have some better timing with films as well, because there is also me. Sometimes when dad kind of shoves films down your throat. Okay, the other thing that we go to, by the way, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Golden Globus Cinema this week. Happy birthday to Murray and Griff. This week, They are discussing the first James Cameron Terminator film, so check that out. It's a fun one. Joe Coleman, not the Tigers pitcher, is also in on it, and that's a fun. It's just a fun listen. And my experience with that, I was 14. Was I 14? Yes, 14, going on 15, and my brother just had his first son. And my mother and I and her friend, our friend Gloria, we went to Fort Walton Beach, Florida. And I believe there was one night where the ladies took care of the baby and brothers went out. And we went. It was my first time going to a movie theater bar restaurant. You know, like what we used to have here in town, like Hollywood Bar and Filmworks. But it was anyway. So the fact that I was able to have popcorn and pizza and French fries and watch The Terminator. It was a great evening. One of the better evenings with my brother. So anyway, that is my encounter with that. And yeah, then it became, you rented it almost every week. So the other bonus question with this is if you get a chance, and I posted it on Facebook, you can also go to thisamericanlife.org. Look for the essay, Many a Thing She Ought to Understand. And it's the story of one of the producers of This American Life, Diane Wu, who had only watched tape one. This is back when there were when you had an epic film and it would come on two cassettes, two VCR cassettes. You know, like Titanic, Dr. Zhivago, Lawrence of Arabia, that sort of thing. She had only watched tape one of The Sound of Music and thought that was the end of the film. And they talk, so the essay is her watching the second tape with another person, with a cohort, and hearing her response, and then it's basically deeming, I don't need tape two. So I wondered, for those who are serious VHS collectors, of which I was one, where does tape one end? And I got a mixture of answers. So, but I'll share these with you. And then we'll also find out what you've been watching, so grab a pencil. Brian writes, I remember where the commercial breaks were in a lot of movies that my parents taped from broadcast TV. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I have a VHS tape, or was it Betamax? Doesn't matter. But I had recorded the PBS airing of Monty Python and the Holy Grail with the 10-minute pledge break in the center. So anyway, there were scenes in Star Wars that I never saw until 1995. In fact, when I got my hands on the THX remastered tapes on VHS, because I had only seen the edited-for-television version. Yeah. And I also happened to catch The Wizard of Oz when it was on cable relatively recently, and the commercials were exactly in the same spots as that they were decades ago when it aired every year on CBS. Thank you, Brian. Give my love to the fairies. That's the changeling and mustard seed. He knows. Eric writes, and by the way, look for Turues going on stage soon. Eric's directing it. One of my favorite films is Anatomy of a Murder. The first time I watched it on a local show called When Movies Were Movies, and about halfway through there was a power outage, so I only saw the first half. A few years later, I saw it was on again, playing on some late-night classic film program, and the same thing happened. It wasn't until I purchased a VHS copy that I saw the whole thing. I wore the tape out. Eric, I also love Anatomy of a Murder. Great courtroom drama. More people need to check it out. And so I was able to ask him when he thought the film ended. And he goes, I think the first time it was right around the point where the courtroom portion started. I think the second time was when George C. Scott started talking about panties. Yeah, that happens. So, but no, it's a great courtroom drama. Great score. Great soundtrack by Duke Ellington, who has a great cameo with Jimmy Stewart. And yes, tell Lee Remick about my shows. Eric also writes, in terms of what I watched this week, Stutz, and I'm rewatching seasons 1 and 2 of Ted Lasso. So I also got a lot of these. Channing writes, I seem to remember Lawrence of Arabia breaking at the intermission. Duh. What was the scene before intermission? And then he went where it's just after where Claude Rains and Jack Hawkins are walking outside military headquarters and talking about how they're going to keep Lawrence on a string. So there you go. Thank you, Channing. Okay, Amanda writes, In Bruges, yes. If you're a fan of Banshees of Inisherin, Sharon, you've hopefully seen In Bruges. Amanda's also watched Red Army, The Paradine Case. Wow, what timing, Amanda. I have that. I purchased the Alfred Hitchcock's The Paradine Case at a library sale a few weeks back, and that's on my pile, so I'm going to have to get to that. Thank you, Amanda. Amanda also watched Marshall and Tar, so thank you there. Molly writes, finally watched The Sandlot all the way through. Manny writes, I believe tape one of Casino ended with De Niro meeting with that cowboy dude, or as I called him, the great LQ Jones. Thank you, Manny. Doug writes, thanks for sharing this report. I like when she discovers the University of Edelweiss and the need for a sense of homeland at times at National Strife. Films this week, the Oscar, lousy film about a repulsive actor played by Stephen Boyd. I love the Oscar. Oscar is just glorious trash movies. Hi, Steve. I'm Stephen Patterson. I'm thinking of you. I know you love that film, too. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Still Alice, and a rewatch of Elvis. So thank you, Doug. And let's see. Allison said, as a kid, my mom always made us go to bed after the wedding. So that's where I thought it ended until I was in my teens. Talking about Sound of Music. David writes, Wizards, that's Ralph Bashke's Wizards, Jojo Rabbit, and A History of Violence. Hello, Maria. Lou Harry writes, Stratford Festival stream of 2022's Hamlet, outstanding. Kevin writes, Women Talking. Eric's back again. First views, Godzilla King of the Monsters. Awful, as you no doubt are aware. Thank you. Also, Laurel and Hardy in Tit for Tat. And Johnny Toes, The Heroic Trio, part of the Criterion Channel's Michelle Yeoh collection. plus two more TCM impulsive rewatches, The French Connection and The Sting. And he adds, despite owning quite a few two-cassette films, I don't remember where in the film any of them ended on tape one. Well, that's why I asked. I think tape one of The Sound of Music and West Side Story ended at intermission. Thank you. Yeah, I got that. Pretty sure Barry Lyndon did as well. I know my first DVD of Amadeus was a two-sided single-layered disc, and side one ended in a completely arbitrary piece about 80 minutes into the movie. Yeah, I once loaned it to a friend, and he returned it without having seen the last hour of the film. Oh, my God. Sorry about that. Yeah, I think I still do. I have the DVD of A Time to Kill, and that's, you got to flip that. You had to flip that one over, so. Daniel writes, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves and Day for Night. You can see Daniel in Breaking the Code at Richmond Civic Theater. Frank writes, Don't Worry, Darling, overall an okay film. However, another movie proving that the camera loves Florence Pugh and she's excellent in this. Yeah, I also like looking at Florence Pugh, especially in this film, even though it's Stepford Wives meets The Truman Show. Brian writes, first time viewings, Scream 4 and Scream 5, getting ready for Tibbs Drive-In opening day this Friday. Oh, is that the case? Here we go, hot typing on film sociology. And yes, they open this weekend. So congratulations, the Tibbs Drive-In. And this weekend is, let's see, Screen 1, Shazam, Fury of the Gods, and Megan, or Mithrigan. Screen 2, Creed 3 and Devotion. Screen 3 is Scream 6 and Violent Night. And Scream 4, Cocaine Bear and Knock at the Cabin. So there you go. It's going to be chilly, but go check that out over at the Tibbs Drive-In. Gary writes, Sanjuro. Jennifer writes, I'm thinking tape 2 began with the wedding. Yes, that's what we were talking about. As what we've been watching, it's been TV, not films, Last of Us, Mandalorian, and Ted Lasso. That's right, Jennifer. Jeff writes, The Cable Guy. Robert writes, nothing new for Oscars week. All I Desire, La Triute, Cleopatra, The Heroic Trio, Honor Among Lovers, and Night After Night. Thank you, Robert. Jay writes, we saw Champions, really good movie. We need more like this one. And there's no the in that title. Tracy Forner writes that he watched The Drop twice. Wow. Craig writes, no films, but by last night, I had watched every original Twilight Zone ever made. It took a few months to work through all 5 seasons. Congratulations, Craig. That's a great hurdle when you have finished a series. So good on you. Ready to go. Zachariah writes, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, White of the Eye, Ariel, Leningrad Cowboys Go America, EO, and Armageddon Time. Justina writes, RRR, it was genuinely amazing. Linda writes, The Dinner with Laura Linney and Richard Gere, Out of Africa, and The Report with Adam Driver and Annette Bening. Kurt's back. Movies for Beltrace this past weekend were Book Club in anticipation with the upcoming sequel, and Brigadoon for Second Sunday Musicals. Thank you, Kurt. Are we really anticipating the Book Club sequel? Okay. Britt writes, Kenneth Branagh's Murder on the Orient Express and Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. Tom writes, Witness for the Prosecution, Lawton and Lanchester, sigh, and Gorgeous Dietrich, Theater of Blood, a romp for Shakespeare fans, plus Diana Rigg, yeah, and Vincent Price doing hammy Shakespeare, I love it. Ordinary People, Mary Tyler Moore is a villain, wow. Yeah, and Tron, the original broke new ground, so-so story, but Wendy Carlos score. Yeah, that's a visual treat, Tom. Thank you there. Maria writes Hidalgo, Bambi, and Land Before Time. Rachel writes The Shadow Riders. David writes Breaker Morant. Adam writes Wakanda Forever and True Romance. Linda writes Champions. Eric writes Chinatown. Elaine writes Snatch. Kathy chimes in, tape one ended when she leaves the Von Trapp house to go back to the Abbey. Thank you. And finally, Patricia writes, An American in Paris. And there you go, friends. That's what we've been chatting about. Oh, wait a minute. Not quite ready to wrap things up yet. At IU Cinema on Tuesday, March 21st at 7 o'clock, Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, another film that's on my pile that I bought at a library store. Sale. I got to get there. Get on that again. Thursday, March 23rd at 4 o'clock, Elements, a short anthology. Thursday, March 23rd at 7 p.m., Totally Effed Up. Friday, March 24th, Diva Worship, Trevor, Flaming Creatures, and Mala Mala at 7 p.m., Friday the 24th. And then Friday, March 24th at 10 p.m., the Diva Legends Dance Party. Saturday, March 25th at 4 p.m., All the Beauty and Bloodshed. And Sunday, March 26th, Exposing Murray Bridge. All of that is happening at IU Cinema. This weekend at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., March 17th and 18th, yes, The Quiet Man. Great to see that on the big screen. and then March 24th and 25th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Outsiders, as I was mentioning earlier. Thank you, Francis Coppola and S.E. Hinton. Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., March 31st and April 1st, 2001, A Space Odyssey. And finally, April 7th and 8th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Friday and Saturday, The Glenn Miller Story. And then a performance from the Glenn Miller Orchestra on Thursday, April 13th. All right, and there you go. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites and trying to remember what happens at the end of tape one and hopefully having better cinematic timing with certain films. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Check out some Oscar-winning or nominated films, and check out some Paul Sorvino, because we miss him and we love him. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!